Suffreaks, it's your boy Marty Bent here to introduce this rip with Ed Dowd. Semi-annual check-in with the man who was running the numbers on the COVID vaccine rollout and the ill effects it is having on individuals' health around the world. Update, the numbers have only gotten worse. We jump into all of that and more, particularly his backing and involvement with Bobby Kennedy's campaign for president here in the United States, why he's backing him, what his platform is, and how we can get away from the clown world. The clown world's only getting more insane by the day. I should never have called peak clown world 2 summers ago. It's literally 2 years ago. It's only gotten significantly more insane since then. Before we jump into the sponsors, I have to read the top four boost of the week from RIP 431, Bitcoin Privacy, and the PayJoin Dev Kit with Dan Gould at Blockchain Bug, 5,000 sats, PDK, LDK, BDK, tools galore, add PDK to Zeus. I'll make sure to relay the message to Evan and the team at Zeus. At Lone Star, 5,000 sats. Might we see Bitcoin Core 25.0.N from now to infinity? I'm not sure. Didn't catch that one. Mahu 93. 1,000 sats, thanks for the signal. And Blockchain Bug coming in at number 4 and number 1, 500 sats. Laughing, negativity, look into river. Laughing emoji. I don't know what that means. But speaking of river, this report was brought to you by River. Last few months have shown that it's really hard to find a reliable Bitcoin partner, Bitcoin exchange partner in the space, with Prime Trust blowing up, not really even blowing up, just committing overt fraud. And them being a third-party dependency for a lot of exchanges in the space is highlighting the need for a company that went the hard route and built their own infrastructure and actually controls their own destiny. That is River. If you DCA, dollar cost average, using River, you're not going to pay any fees. Other exchanges have high spreads and high fees, so you can fix that by setting up auto DCA on River. You know that if you hold Bitcoin on River's exchange, it is backed one-to-one, fully reserved in multi-sig cold storage. However, they highly encourage you to take self-custody, and they will teach you how to do that. They have plenty of literature on their site to navigate you as you take Bitcoin off their exchange and into your own possession. River, they're doing it the right way, the hard way, but it ensures that you have a good experience. And if you ever have any questions and you're a U.S. customer, they do have phone lines. You can call them and they'll answer the phone and they'll answer your questions. So go to river.com/TFTC, set up an account today, pick a Bitcoin partner that's doing it the right way. river.com/TFTC. Speaking of Bitcoin partners that do it the right way, another one is Unchained. Unchained, like River, has been doing it the right way for many years, and they went the hard route of building their own custody infrastructure, and they're a Bitcoin financial services company that really built their products from the native multi-sig primitives that exist in Bitcoin's protocol. So they have their Vault product, which is a 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet where you hold 2 keys, Unchained holds 1. You have full control over your Bitcoin as long as you have those 2 keys. If you're ever in a pinch, Unchained is there to be the second in those 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum. And then on top of that, 2 or 3 multi-sig primitive, they've built products. They have their lending desk where you can put Bitcoin up as collateral to get USD liquidity. You hold 1 key in that quorum, Unchained holds 1, then Kingdom Trust holds the other. Since you have a key in this quorum, you can see your Bitcoin throughout the duration of your loan. You know it's not being lent out or rehypothecated on the back end. It is there once you pay your loan. Plus the interest, you're going to get your Bitcoin back. They have Bitcoin trading desk as well. You set up your vault. You can buy Bitcoin in bulk using Unchained's trading desk. It goes straight from that buy to your vault. Unchained never holds it. You buy Bitcoin and it gets sent straight to your vault. They also have an IRA product if you want an IRA and the ability to hold your own keys. You want a Bitcoin IRA with the ability to hold your own keys. Unchained has that as well. So go check it all out at unchained.com. Go to unchained.com/consultation. Set up a consultation with their team. At the very least, you don't have to ape into Unchained. You should reach out to them, tell them the TFTC sent you, and learn more about what they're building. Because I think they're building a generational business there at Unchained. This report was also brought to you by good friends at CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is here to help you reimagine how you pay for your healthcare. It's not health insurance. Health insurance is notoriously opaque, expensive, and impersonal. CrowdHealth is flipping the script. Again, it's not health insurance. You pay a monthly fee. If you ever have a medical event, you go to CrowdHealth. You say, hey, I'm about to go to the doctor. They say, okay, give us the bill. After that, you give them the bill. They go to the doctor. They negotiate the price lower. And then you pay $500 of that bill, and the rest gets crowdfunded by the rest of the CrowdHealth community, which is built of relatively healthy people. So the overall healthcare cost for the CrowdHealth community is lower. It's a beautiful thing. You have a personal health advocate as well. So they're going to walk you through the process of getting the bill, negotiating, explain how they negotiate the doctor to get the bill lower, and then work to ensure that your bill gets crowdfunded. On top of that, they can find doctors for you. They have a list of doctors. If you're looking for like-minded doctors, Bitcoiner doctors, doctors that understand that preventative healthcare in the form of good exercise and diet is the way to go and not to jack you up with pharmaceuticals, CrowdHealth has a roster of those doctors. So go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC and sign up today. Last but not least, this report was brought to you by our good friends at Bitcoin Talent Co. Bitcoin Talent Co., like all the companies that we like to shill here that are related to Bitcoin, is a Bitcoin company built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. It's a recruiting firm that really understands Bitcoin at all layers of the stack. They understand the protocol layer, multisig, lightning, mining. If you're a company looking to hire talent in the space, you're looking to hit your growth phase, and you're looking for the best talent in the world, go set up a profile and get onboarded with Bitcoin Talent Co. They have a background with Uber. Andy, the co-founder, started Uber's growth team and took them from, I believe, below 100 people to beyond 10,000. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to find the best talent. So if you're looking for a CFO, a COO, or just an SDR, go get set up with Bitcoin Talent Co. They'll understand your needs and they'll go find you the talent. Alternatively, if you're in big tech, big finance, banking, whatever it may be, engineering, and you want to get into Bitcoin and you have no way to get into the industry, go set up a profile with Bitcoin Talent Co. And they'll bring you the Bitcoin companies that are looking to hire and are looking for what you have. So go to bitcointalent.co, tell them that TFTC sent you, and enjoy this rip with Ed Dowd, the legend. Ta-key.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Ed Dowd, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here. Thank you for having me on again.
How does it feel to be a Nazi living in Hawaii?
Apparently, that's the new thing. MSNBC put out an article today saying that working out is far right. Being healthy is far right.
Yeah, it isn't. I mean, that's what we were just discussing, like the level of clown world is increasing. I made the very large mistake of calling peak clown world, I believe, two summers ago. We're at the point where MSNBC is saying that working out is far right Nazi activity. And that's the one thing is it's getting so crazy at that level. It's driving the question of how many people still believe their bullshit that they're feeding.
I don't think a lot. I think these articles are designed for the permanent victim class mentality, where people want to be patted on the head for their miserable lives. And there's a certain percentage of the population that wants to hear this, but the majority of us don't want to hear these negative lies. I mean, the gaslighting is at the point where it's insane. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the White House put out something about blocking out the sun, saying that would help global warming. obviously the people, the chemtrail people have been saying this for years, that that's what they're doing anyways, and they're just admitting to it now. And then, of course, I just, you know, put out a tweet saying, hey, a hand goes up in the back of the class. Hey, what about massive crop failures and starvation? I mean, these simple, you know, you don't even need to be a scientist to just think, oh, we dim the sun, we have crop failures, billions of people die. And of course, all the respondents in my tweet thread there said, oh, that's the plan. So we're literally at clown world levels everywhere.
Well, I've actually been on this tip for about a year now because Bill Gates was pushing it this time last year. It really does feel like a large humiliation ritual, especially when you consider the fact that a lot of the climate hysterics, particularly with power, whether it be Bill Gates or the Biden administration, are pushing us toward a grid system built predominantly on solar power. And it's really interesting that they want to transition us to solar grids and then blot out the sun. It really doesn't make any sense.
It makes no sense. And a lot of this, these power failures are due to the how the electrical grid system operates. And when you get rid of coal and fossil fuels and you switch to wind and solar, you have something that's called base load and peaker capacity. So they can take care of the base load in a normal energy usage day, but there are hot days where air conditioning goes on and cold days where people turn on the heat higher. And during those times, you need peakers, usually coal-based peakers. I used to be electric utility analyst, so I can speak to this. And you need that peaker capacity to keep the lights on. So all these rolling blackouts, which they're blaming on global warming, are actually by design. I mean, you can't make this up. That's why California has blackouts all the time and tells you to buy Teslas. And then, you can't charge them.
Yeah, don't plug your Tesla in overnight. We've got rolling brownouts here. Now, this is a big fight I've been fighting within the Bitcoin mining industry, because Bitcoin mining as a dispatchable load, an interruptible load, can really help out grid systems during peak demand when miners can just turn off and deliver that electricity back to the grid. But one part of the narrative that many miners have got caught on, and I think is a misstep, is they're like, yeah, we're going to incentivize the build out of more wind and solar because we can be that dispatchable load for them. And I'm like, it doesn't make any sense. You should be pushing nuclear and natural gas and just build out capacity for those fuel sources as much as you can, mine with the excess capacity during times of low demand, and then sell it back to the grid during peak demand.
The other thing about coal, they put in scrubbers years ago that are quite good, that don't vomit the pollution they used to into the air. The big problem with coal is strip mining and, of course, devastating certain portions of the earth. But in terms of the air pollution, they've done a phenomenal job, of cutting a lot of that out. So it's more political than it is like a reality of coal polluting like it used to. It just doesn't.
No, we need more energy. Energy and electricity production correlates very tightly with human flourishing. And around, funnily enough, 1971, the Henry Adams curve flatlined once we started printing fiat money out of thin air and not investing in critical energy infrastructure. I have hope, though.
Absolutely. So, look, the fiat system allowed these circus wars to go on overseas, which are nothing more than conduits to grift with your friends in the military-industrial complex. And so Bobby Kennedy talks about this. We spend all this treasure overseas. Our roads are crumbling. Our electric grids is crumbling. Our school system is a joke. So we have not invested in the infrastructure of this country. Had we done that, we'd be singing a different tune right now. But the fiat system has enabled war and grift and an ecosystem around which people make tons of money keeping that system rolling. And that's what Trump tried to fight when he got there. He mis-executed. He didn't get the right personnel in there, and he was deceived in many ways. But, we're hopeful Bobby can figure it out, if he can get the Democratic nomination.
I mean, it seems like it's desperately needed to get fixed. I'm not sure. I'm going to assume that all the Max Blumenthal testimony in front of the UN the other week, where they found the receipts of a lot of the money that the government has given Ukraine to bolster their war efforts against Russia. And it's nauseating. It's disgusting. If those receipts are true, how much money is just being funneled to special interest over there?
Well, so what do we spend, like almost $1 trillion? How much did we give them? Are they like 800 billion, some nonsensical number? I might be misquoting there, but it's a lot of money. And there was recently reports of ammunition shortages in the Ukraine. So clearly it's not going towards ammunition or munitions. So where's that money going? Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we could start there. I mean, Bobby Kennedy is making a big splash in the mainstream right now. I think his strategy of going to podcasters like Rogan and David Bettman is really good, and he's getting a lot of attention. That's the big question. Will the Democrats actually have debates and allow there to be a primary process that would allow him to get the nomination?
You know, I'm just hopeful that the conversation changes. And I joined the campaign because of different conversations that were, you know, before Bobby got into it, not really talked about, but he's forcing the injection of these conversations. I think they're net good for the country. I'm hopeful that he can get the nomination, but obviously the DNC is a mafia and they'll do everything in their power to make sure that doesn't happen. But, you know, it's early days. It's July. The campaign in 4 days raised like $4 million or $3.5 million to meet their goal. And they overshot the goal by $1.4 million. And so, you know, we think that this is a grassroots effort. This kind of echoes what Trump did in 2016. You know, Trump, you know, had a shot on goal. So like Bobby's the real anti-establishment candidate at the moment.
Yeah. It reminds me a lot of Trump in 2015, where everybody was like, there's no chance in hell that he's going to get a nomination, let alone the presidential. He's going to win the election. There's a lot of people saying the same things with RFK right now. It's like, I don't know. There's a lot of good momentum going on here. And it, like you said, he's bringing up conversations that people desperately want brought up in the mainstream, and particularly around like the COVID vaccine and everything that happened around that, which we have discussed throughout the years here on this show. But there's definitely people who are like, all right, like it's time we talk about this stuff. He's talking about it, and he doesn't always bring it up. It's people asking him about it, and people seem to be responding like, thank you for bringing this up. We need to not just sweep this under the rug because things are going terribly awry, and you've been documenting this for years, wrote the book about it. And it seems like the data is only getting worse. That's why we wanted to catch up. Last time we spoke was January of this year. Fast forward 6 months, and the data only seems to be getting worse.
I think I said on your show, as we roll through time, I'm only going to be proven more right, and that's the case. I mean, the U.S. disability data for June came out on Friday. It went up 857,000 in the month of June. Broke out to a new high. I know you're a Bitcoin guy, so pretend it's a Bitcoin chart. It's a breakout and it's accelerating, and you know that's not a good thing. And so we broke out to new highs. Employed men and employed women broke out to new highs with disabilities. If you look, you don't need any math expertise. You can look at the slope of the lines. The slope of the men and women who are employed is way steeper than the slope of the general U.S. population. So, you know, it's absurd that this is not a national security concern at this point. But the good news is, I don't know if you noticed, I don't know if you saw the tweet, I put it out. I didn't even mention the vax. I just said bad news. Disability went to new all-time highs. And then a lot of people came in to comment on how I lied. And it's just data. It's great. The data speaks for itself now. I don't even need to mention the vaccine. And then Bobby Kennedy retweeted it. He made a comment on it. I think only as time goes on, it's going to get worse. I mean, the excess deaths was a big deal, but they're a small number compared to the disabilities and injuries that we have going on. The lost work time data that we put out, we're going to drop a report this week. It's the UK PIP data. It's called the personal independence payment system. It's their disability system. And so we're going to show different causes now. We're now dipping down. We got a database that shows a phenomenal black swan rise in different body system claims. And then you can drill down into the causes. And when we drop this, you know, we're not doctors, so we're going to enlist the help of doctors to help us with this, because let's say we're wrong. It's not the vaccine. At the very least, it needs to be discussed because it's exploding. It's multiple black swan events and different causes in the UK. We suspect that that data, if we had a data set in the US we could access, would be very similar to what we're seeing in the overall US disability numbers. So this needs to be addressed. Doctors need to start to respond to this. Regulators need to say to us, why aren't they responding to clear signals that we're seeing statistically that I'm sure they're seeing? So this is all coming out. I believe that the event horizon on vaccine awareness is in acceleration mode, and it's going to kind of have a tipping point sometime in the fall, I think.
Yeah. And so with this UK PIP data, what are a lot of the ailments that people are suffering
from?
Let's talk about
hematology is a body system, and within that, there's a bunch of causes. That whole system is up 550% in 2022 versus trend line. So it went up in 21, accelerated to absurd heights in 2022. That's about 25 standard deviations on a monthly basis. That's a joke. That's three standard deviations on Wall Street's like rut-row. Six is a black swan. Anything above six is like gravy. So this is 25 standard deviations. It's a joke. And there's other things we're going to report. Mood disorders are up huge. Musculoskeletal issues. All sorts of inflammatory issues are up huge. And there's something I'm going to hold back until we drop the report that's going to shock people. And it shouldn't be happening. And there needs to be an explanation as to why it's going on. So we'll hopefully drop it this Wednesday. But the data is, as Yuri, my partner, said, they can't run from the data. They can't run from this data. They just can't run from it.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about the concept of turbo cancer too, that's another, we were talking about like reports of
cancers are on the rise. They started coming later. They started coming in 22. We're seeing three and four standard deviation cancers now. So that's unfortunately, we think, a medium term to long term effect. And it started to go off the rails in 21 a little bit, and it's only accelerating in 22. So three to four standard deviations in all sorts of cancers.
Yeah. When we reach that event horizon, when we get to the tipping point, maybe in fall, what do you think, especially like an election season, if the DNC doesn't let debates happen, if they don't let like a true primary happen, Biden was the one driving a lot of the vaccine mandates. I mean, Trump on the other side, seems like he's going to be a shoo-in for the Republican side. He initiated Operation Warp Speed and still is taking credit for the vaccine to this day. Like, are we going to be stuck in a position where and just nothing's going to get done because the two parties involved don't want to solve the problem because they were the big drivers of it in the first place?
Look, if it's a contest between Trump and Biden, it's a no-brainer. I'm voting Trump. But as of this moment, I'm backing Bobby because Bobby's out in front on the vaccine issue and Trump is not. And he has to come clean, admit he made a mistake, ask for forgiveness and move on. The current stance he has is untenable to me, and I can't support that. Obviously, if it's Trump and Biden, I have to go with Trump. But right now, I can't.
Yeah. Do you think Bobby would run as an independent if he didn't get in?
Don't know. I'm not. It's probably best they don't include me in those discussions.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be interesting. I guess that's the other thing too. Is I really liked to see Bobby really changing the narrative and getting these conversations out there, supporting Bitcoin at the Bitcoin conference this year. I always fall back to my first principles, which is like we're never going to solve this problem via the incumbent political apparatus. Like, we really, yes, Bobby's campaign may be a grassroots movement, but we need like a grassroots movement that is external to the political system that got us in this problem in the first place.
Yeah. And we're still expecting a recession to really materialize this quarter, next quarter, and first quarter. The stock market is absurdly struggling to convince people there's a new bull market. I suspect that we'll be cascading a lot lower by October, November this year. People are going to be freaking out. So, you know, I never get into specific timing. When this goes, it's going to go big and fast, and we're close. So unfortunately, as we approach the event horizon, I suspect it's going to be so bad that they're going to need distractions in the media and at the White House to kind of take the eyeball off of the vaccine event horizon and the financial calamity that's coming. So, you know, look, I'll just use a very simple example. And I avoided talking about the issue because it's a non-issue for me, but the submarine issue, that was a story. The news cycle ran for a week on that. They knew on Sunday that it had imploded and they were all dead. They withheld that information to keep the story alive to distract from the Hunter Biden fiasco that was going on at the time. So I don't put it above the government, the U.S. government, to try to distract us from the narratives that are coming. My fear is that it has to be of a nature that's so big that it terrifies people, and that could be war, false flag. I don't know what it is, but I'm looking for it, and whatever appears in the fall, I'll be very suspicious and apply my critical thinking skills to determine whether or not it was a manufactured event or whatever.
I got my money on aliens. They're really greasing the aliens railroad there.
Well, you know, look, I've been watching the media, and I'm a financial analyst, and I look for tells, and these stories they've been talking about have been seeding the public mind for about a year. Now we had the Las Vegas nonsense with the alien in someone's backyard, and there's all sorts of indications that's on the table. And you know, look, if they could convince the globe that there's an alien threat, think about the amount of money they could justify spending to keep this current system afloat. The system, as you and I have talked about, needs constant credit creation. So when you print the dollar, you create a debt, and it needs constant credit creation. And you know, if you wanted to keep this current system alive, unlimited spending on the imminent alien threat would be a bonanza spending spree we've never seen before. So I wouldn't put it past them. I don't think it's going to fly. That would be ludicrous if they tried it.
Well, like, separating ourselves from like the COVID stuff and just looking purely at the numbers on like the debt side, like after the debt ceiling impasse was fixed, I guess you could say, not fixed is not the right word. They just kicked the can down the road further than they ever have.
Well, what's interesting about that is there's no cap on
exactly.
It's uncapped. And I believe it's uncapped because they know an economic crisis is coming. And the government needs dry powder to spend our way out of it and kickstart the credit system again with spending. So I think Speaker McCarthy was pulled aside. This is speculation on my part, but you know, there was a sense of betrayal in the GOP when he did this. I think he basically got tapped and said, "We got something on the horizon. We're going to need all the the free gunpowder that we can have." And I think that's why they did it.
Yeah, I mean, they added $1 trillion in debt in less than a month right after they raised the ceiling. And then you factor in the disability numbers that just came out. Like, that problem's only going to be exacerbated, especially if the stock market tanks, capital gains taxes aren't there next year. They're already pretty bad this year. I mean, tax receipts are down bad this year. Like, they're going to have to do something insane. Like, it is, the debt is reaching like hockey stick levels. Like, I feel like on the debt side of things, we've already entered that event horizon.
Yeah, no. So, you know, after COVID was a war. If you think about, you know, how governments inflate their way out of debt problems, war is one of them. COVID was a war. We were going into a global economic collapse in 2019. And then out of nowhere, COVID came to save us. And they were able to spend and print like drunken sailors. So that was a war. So forget about thinking about it as a virus. It was a war. They printed 65% money supply year over year increase, the fastest money supply printing ever on record, and then that printing then showed up in government spending, And that's how the debt was created. And global governments around the world spent on the COVID care, whatever their version of the COVID CARES Act was. And it was like, it was a drunken spending spree. We know about all the billionaires that became even bigger billionaires, the small minority who benefited from this. And it was a joke. And here we are. And that sugar high is wearing off. Money supply year over year growth rate has now gone negative, and we've had bank failures and economic activities screeching to a halt. Real estate activity, Airbnb activity, manufacturing activity, and consumers are extended as far as they can be on their credit card. Housing's unaffordable. Autos are unaffordable. So what comes next? Home prices have to go lower. Car prices have to go lower. Lots of stuff's going lower. So we see a deflationary setup here. And then they're going to have to respond and print more and create more debt and spend more. That's kind of, we're in this endless cycle. And, you know, I did a presentation in April talking about the stimulus between crises and the time between crises. There used to be 9 years, then it became six, then it's now two. COVID was 2 years ago when they did all the 2.5 years ago. Now we're already at crisis time. So the system is naturally reaching its kind of, you know, event horizon where, you know, they can no longer keep the game going, because every time you try to inflate your way out, you create a deflationary whipsaw on the other side. It's classically called the liquidity trap. And that's, I think we're getting closer and closer to that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the Weimar scenario, where they oscillated violently between deflation and inflation on the road to hyperinflation in Weimar Republic. And that's the other scary thing about what's going on right now. Like, this is global. If you look over to like the UK, they're still hitting all-time highs or new highs in inflation month over month. Germany has bankruptcy rates hitting an all-time high. You have this tectonic shift going on the global stage with BRICS countries trying to team up. Like, is this a global contagion when this does hit the fan?
Yeah, so we don't know where it's going to start. Does Japan, do we have a currency crisis in Japan? Does the Hong Kong dollar depeg? Does the Chinese yuan unpeg? Do we lose, you know, that's going to be the release valve on all this is currency. It's always been currency. So something's coming. The current, you know, feeling in the U.S. is everything's fine, even though the economic numbers, if you look underneath them, are bad. And only because the stock market indices have kind of recovered somewhat from their October low. What people don't understand about the stock market, it's basically been 5-6 stocks that have driven the whole S&P 500 up. And the average stock is down on the year. So, you know, most people don't own those 5 stocks. So this I've seen how this ends. It's called breath. Breath is horrendous. These 5 stocks are going to come back to earth. And when they do, it's going to unleash a whole kind of deleveraging system, margin call in what's going on in the U.S. equity markets. And that's coming soon.
Yeah. So how do we make sure they don't have the ability to keep kicking the can down the road? Like, it does, like, I could feel it. It's weird. Obviously, it's not everybody that's on board. There is that subset of the population who are eternal victims who just want to be confirmed that they're not the reason for their strife in life. But it does feel like there's this growing, bubbling sort of momentum of people who have become completely disgruntled with the state of our institutions. I mean, if you look at poll numbers for trust in the government, trust in the banking system, trust in the healthcare system, they're reaching all-time lows. And I think that's a problem that we have as a society broadly, is there's many people, most are probably silent, but they recognize that these systemic problems exist and they're only getting worse. And it feels like there's recognition there, but there's also a paralysis on the back end where they're like, what the hell do we do? It's almost like a bit of Stockholm syndrome where they recognize this is a big problem, but they view the only way to fix this is the government and the central banks teaming up to give us more medicine, if you will, more heroin.
Well, the good news is I think more and more people are kind of coming around to your point of view and my point of view, but it's slow, but it's accelerating. The vaccine issue for me, I think, is a big issue because, you know, once we reach that tipping point, there's going to be so much distrust that people are going to red pill themselves. We've all gone through our lives where when you first learn how the world really works, you try to convince people of what you know, and they look at you like you're crazy. So you stop doing that, and you kind of do the give them dribs and drabs as they come to the realization. And I think a lot of people, the COVID has red pilled a lot of people that were previously unaware as to what's going on. The vaccine issue, once this comes out, is going to cause and force a lot of people to really start asking questions and go down some true rabbit holes and some false rabbit holes. I mean, right now there's a lot of people going down all sorts of crazy rabbit holes, and I'm glad that they're just, you know, curious, but I think there's a grand awakening slowly emerging. The problem is, you're right. So like, what do we do? Well, I'm doing what I can do and, you know, hoping for the best. But I, you know, I'm not under any illusions that, you know, I'm potentially of the opinion I may have zero impact on waking people up, but I'm trying my best. Everybody has, you know, can do their own thing. They can pick an issue, whether it's, you know, end the Fed or make people aware of the vaccines or, you know, educate someone on globally what's going on with the dollar, what have you. Everybody can take action. But what's coming is beyond, I think, everyone's control, beyond the central bankers and politicians' control, our control. So there's going to be a lot of chaos. The question is, what do we do in the chaos? We don't have fear, and we try to create, if it looks like the system's going to implode, we create new systems. If we can save the system, you know, by doing things legally and lawfully, we'll try. But you got to have two ways of thinking about this. Trying to fix the system as it is, or be ready to start a new one. And I'm doing both.
Yeah. Have your thoughts on Bitcoin evolved at all throughout the years since the last time we spoke, I guess?
Well, I've never been anti-Bitcoin. You know, once we get through the vaccine stuff, maybe raise money for our hedge fund. Carlos and Yuri are smart physicists. They were doing Bitcoin and crypto projects before all this. They put them on hold. So we'll probably get involved in that arena at some point as well. I'm not the guy to talk about it because my expertise is low, but I'll market the message once they tell me what we're doing.
Well, I think you're a Bitcoiner. I mean, you're obviously not anti-Bitcoin, but I mean, that's why I do this show. That's why I am a partner at a venture fund solely focused on investing in Bitcoin infrastructure, because that's truly what we believe is fix the money, fix the world. All these problems,
right,
go down the line from the healthcare system. It all stems from fiat, the ability to print money, throw it at universities to do these studies, to validate the FDA and their approval of these drugs, to do all the research on the drugs, to fund high fructose corn syrup production in the American farmland to make us all unhealthy. You go down the line, education, just letting woke, insane people take over the education system, just give people a bunch of free money to go to these universities with no accountability. It all stems from the money. That's, again, why I do what I do, is because I think, yeah, there may not be any silver bullets, but I think the most potent bullet we have is to take away their ability to control the money. Is he frozen? We lost Ed. He's frozen right now. The ECAM CIA agent does not want us talking about Bitcoin, apparently.
I'm back. You froze on me.
Ah, you froze on us. We didn't know what was going on there. Where'd I lose you? Or where did you lose me?
We're talking about Bitcoin. And look, I think you nailed it. Money and central banking fiat has been a cause a lot of the problems. And I say in a lot of my speeches, all the things you see going on, everything that's happening lies at the feet of the central bankers and the politicians. And everything else is just an excuse to take the attention away from them. But bottom line. And, you know, Bitcoin is definitely something that's going to survive and stay there. You and I have talked about how, and I believe you know, you don't believe in just crypto in general and all the crypto coin scams. there's definitely been a movement to delegitimize Bitcoin via a lot of these scams. And I do believe that there was a potential blow off top in Bitcoin that was orchestrated to then cause people to lose money and lose faith in it. But, you know, it also could have been just pure speculation, but I like to be suspicious.
I mean, Tom Brady and Giselle lost $48 million investing in FTX. The public sees that. They're like, oh, God, Tom Brady can get duped. This is definitely a scam.
Yeah. What's interesting is all the money the politicians got, they don't have to give back like they did in the Madoff scam. If you made money and other people lost, you had to give money back so they could distribute it. The politicians don't seem to want to give their FTX money back to help those who got defrauded.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big discussion going on behind the scenes, particularly for like venture funds who are in deals with FTX's venture arm. A lot of companies got a lot of money from FTX on the venture side of things. And that's, people are like, oh, is there going to be clawbacks? But it doesn't seem like there are going to be, which I don't know how I feel about that. For one, you feel for the companies. They couldn't have known the extent of the fraud themselves. And obviously the FTX users, like, you obviously feel for them too, for just getting absolutely rugged. And I would actually argue FTX prevented the price from going even higher because they weren't even buying the Bitcoin. They were telling their customers they were going to buy. They were supposed to have something like $8 billion worth of Bitcoin on their balance sheet. They had 6 million when all was said and done.
Oh, my. What a scam. You can tell it looks like this character is protected because I think they're not even going to, they dropped some charges on him, didn't they?
I think they levied more charges on him after the initial charges, and they were going to in his upcoming court cases cover all the charges, but I think they decided to split them up into two different trials. So I think that was a bit of and I got caught by that too, a bit of a fake news where the judge was like,
All right. I didn't retweet anything. I've come to the conclusion, unless I vet something myself, it's hard to know what the hell's real. Even when we see stuff that we like, you know, that fits our narrative, you got to be careful.
Oh, that's the mode you have to operate from. Everything's fake on the internet these days with AI.
Yeah.
I mean, the Paris riots, people were sharing videos of like Fast and the Furious saying that rioters were.
I saw that. The only thing that interested me about the Paris riots was the fact that they did shut down the internet. That was verified. So that was curious. And my daughter was in France on her senior trip with her girlfriends after graduation from high school. I asked her, I was concerned, and I said, hey, what's going on? She said, oh, there's nothing going on. But she was in the southern part of France. But I also heard from a lot of people. There was not, you know, if you looked at Twitter, you assumed France was burning. I think it was probably hyped up on Twitter, but they did shut down the internet. They did censor. So that was interesting. I don't know. There was a reason for that.
Yeah, and it seems like they have a law going into effect at the end of August around social media accounts and what you can and can't post. But no, I did the same thing. I had a neighbor who was over in Paris while this was all going on. I texted him. I was like, Joe, are you all right over there? He's like, yeah, there's nothing going on. Nothing noticeable here.
If I had to be a conspiracy theorist or a critical thinker, let's say critical thinker, it's almost like they created the appearance of riots so they could shut down the internet and have an excuse for it. For whatever reason they need to shut it down for, which they're not telling us.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Things are getting weird, particularly like France, Macron, not backing the U.S. and their efforts in Ukraine. It seems like there's a bit of a fracturing of the unified front with like G8 UN nations, if you will.
Well, look, the dollar as the reserve currency is a big deal for us. And I suspect it's not going to go gently into the night. And the military industrial apparatus, the intelligence agencies, any leader who gets out of line they'll be, you know, they'll be the subject of, you know, a deal they can't refuse. Either you sign your name, or your blood, your brains and blood are going to be on the piece of paper you don't want to sign. So, I mean,
high stakes game.
I mean, look what happened to Libya. Gaddafi wanted to start the gold-backed currency, and they took him out. Iraq didn't have a central bank. Syria doesn't have a central. Anybody that we seem to have enemies, you know, Iran. They don't seem to have central banks that produce, you know, that have debt-based fiat systems. They're just normal central banks that issue state currency.
Yeah, Gaddafi went in the worst way. A knife up the butthole is.
That was horrendous.
Not the way to go. Hillary Clinton was happy about it, though. We came, we saw, he died.
Yeah, she's a wonderful human being.
Yeah, bring it back to Bobby though. One thing. Again, this got me excited about his campaign. I must admit, I've never voted. I'm one of those voting harder does not change things. But the trend or the theme that I've noticed that he's running with is really giving power back to states, letting states make decisions for themselves, which as a Bitcoiner really gets me excited because that's always been my thesis as it pertains to Bitcoin. And whether or not it will be attacked by the federal government is all going to come down to if the states actually stick up for it and make their own laws and their own decisions and tell the federal government, hey, leave us alone. And it seems like Bobby has been running with that. And it's like, hey, we don't want to tell you what to do. We really want to create an environment where states have autonomy and the ability to make decisions for themselves. Because at the end of the day, it's how this country was founded. We are a republic, even though people forget that. And I think that in terms of how do we fix these systemic problems in our society, particularly in the U.S., I think that's a great way to do it. Is just say, hey, let's get more distributed, give power back to the states, not try to have one behemoth fix all the problems. Let's have people in charge near the people that they represent actually make decisions for those people and not have everything try to be solved by the people in D.C.,
Right. And you look, the money that DC gives these states comes with strings attached. And, you know, Hawaii was one of the more draconian on the vaccine issue, primarily because we're a state that gets more money from the federal government than we submit in tax receipts. And we also have a big military industrial complex presence in Pearl Harbor. And so, you know, when we got the money from the government, they were like, you're going to do what we say. And then the governor and the mayors around Hawaii did what they were told to do. It comes with strings attached, this power and money.
Telling you, you're a Bitcoiner, you don't know it. I've been pushing the idea and trying to meme the reality of Bitcoin mining permanent funds into existence, just using the Alaskan Oil Permanent Fund as an example, like energy rich states, Wyoming, Texas, Oklahoma, Kentucky, Tennessee, just issue municipal bonds, raise cash, get some mining infrastructure, partner with a private mining company to operate it. You pay back the bonds plus the interest, then you roll all the profits into a permanent fund that gives you the power to tell the federal government, hey, we don't need that money with your strings attached anymore.
Yeah, if you have resources, fiat money is all, what really backs fiat money is commodities at its core, resources that then get manufactured into widgets and things. People forget that. I mean, if you're a resource rich country, you can literally write your own ticket if you're smart about it. But, you know, you might get a visit from the CIA and, you know, you might get assassinated. That's the problem because, the system it's a control system. The dollar SWIFT system, the petrodollar, it's a control system. And it's you know, he who controls the debt controls the conflict, controls everything.
Yeah. Do you think we can get rid of the three-letter agencies? They seem to be really running the show behind the scenes. Oh, we lost them again. As soon as we talk about the CIA, talk about Bitcoin. There we go. Yeah, internet gremlin stopping us just as I'm about to ask the question. Like, do you think we've taken t- take control of these three-letter agencies and reel them in, because they really seem to be driving a lot of the fuckery in the world today, and potentially driving most of the government.
Let's talk about Bobby Kennedy and his candidacy. He's talked about what happened to his uncle and his father, and he's not pulling any punches. We all know that the intelligence agencies are a permanent bureaucracy. There's, you know, there's a revolving door between private industry and the government. And I think they're out of control. And I think there's black ops budgets we don't know about. There's black holes we don't see that get money gets spent on whatever, God knows whatever agendas. I'll just use one example that I know for, like, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. Before we went into Afghanistan, Afghanistan was responsible for like 15% of the total poppy production for heroin. Once we got in there, it became 90%. 90%. So what do you think was going on there? And we've all seen the pictures of the troops guarding the poppy fields, or at least walking through them, looking like they're guarding the poppy fields. So it doesn't, I don't even need to be in the room to know. So that's odd. We went from 15% market share in Afghanistan to 90% once we got there. That's curious. And we were there for 20 years. What the hell was going on there for 20 years?
Yeah. I mean, you go Iran-Contra, stuff they were doing in Nicaragua. I mean, I don't think this has ever been confirmed, but using the Mexican drug cartels to get crack cocaine into the inner cities here. I mean, going all the way back, MK Ultra, Operation Paperclip, Mockingbird.
Wasn't there a scandal in the Obama administration with Eric Holder and something to do with firearms? I forget the name of the scandal, but there was some fuckery going on with the firearms, the ATF, and like the, you know, running it through drug cartel. It was just crazy. But this has been going on forever. These dark, shadowy systems that we know nothing about that are just run amok.
Yeah. And then what was the Pentagon audit shortfall? Something like $8 trillion, $3 trillion or $8 trillion?
It was like $2 trillion back in 2001, which is was a ton of money back then. I think Rumsfeld mentioned that on the Senate floor on the 10th, September 10th of 2001. And then 9/11 happened and we never heard about that again.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And last year. Last year, yeah, that bumped up like $8 trillion, I believe. And that's the thing that's in my mind. Like, as humans, are we just destined to be subjected to these power-hungry forces, whether it be the three-letter agencies, large governments? Like, are we just doomed to allowing those psychopaths to get control of power and really manipulate our lives behind the scenes?
Well, look, government has monopoly on violence, and government at its core is an agreement to set laws in place so that, you know, as a property owner, you don't get raided by the bandits. So it's a protection racket when you think about it, it's a protection racket. And unfortunately, the protection racket has some utility, but it's grown to a point now where, you know, they wanted to basically sell us back our freedoms via a jab and quarterly injections with passport cards. That's the absurdity of the growth of the government. And, you know, you got to understand the growth of the government as a percent of GDP has gone from something like 15% 80 years ago to, like, as of COVID, it got as high as 43% of the GDP. So when the government becomes that big, it literally needs to feed on the populace to continue this crazy, you know, growth of whatever they're trying to do. And it's, you know, there are a lot of people that, you know, support what the government does because their paycheck comes from the government.
Yeah. And if we do get past this event horizon and we do figure all this shit out, like, what do you think we can do on the back end if we are successfully able to get these nefarious forces out of the way, get all this money printing out of our lives? Like, looking around now, like what we're doing now, you're in Hawaii, I'm in New Jersey. We're doing pretty incredible things. Like, it's all in spite of everything we've discussed up to this point. Like, what could we unleash if those forces weren't a burden on us right now?
Oh, I think humanity is going to have a renaissance, but to get to the renaissance, we're going to go through chaos. And I don't know how long it is. Is that 2 years, a year, 10 years? I mean, historically, when you look at these big turning points in generational histories, you know, the fourth turning, these types of analyses, it takes a long time. So, you know, I've been telling people to just kind of strap on your hard hat, live your life, don't live in fear, do what you can, and build networks of like-minded people, and you have community, because, you know, some of the best things in life are free. The friendships I've made in the last 2 years from like-minded individuals is fantastic. I kind of didn't expect that. I just thought I was going out on a limb. But now, you know, I didn't realize how awake so many people are until I found them, and, you know, people like you and others. And we're building communities, and it's going to be great, but it's not going to be easy. And more people are coming to our side. I mean, we're about freedom. We're about integrity. We're about truth. And those who live in the old world, who buy the mainstream nonsense, are basically being told that working out is a far right activity. So that's where we are. I mean, we're gotten to the point where, you know, you have to make a choice. Either come over to our side or live in a clown world. And if you want to live in clown world, it's now detrimental to your health with these vaccines. And now don't eat eggs, because apparently if you eat a quarter of an egg a day, you're chance of heart attack. And I mean, these just bogus studies, nonsense. You know, things are coming out now that 16 million Americans are at risk of heart attack because they exercise too much. Okay.
Yeah, turbo cancer's springing because people are getting too much sun exposure, too much vitamin D.
It's right. The New York Times told us to hide from the sun this summer because it's killing us. Okay, sure it is.
Yeah. Luckily, people aren't listening. 4th of July on the beaches in New Jersey was jam-packed. Tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Blissfully enjoying time with their family. That's the other thing. I think strong families, too, is one thing this country needs to get back to. And something I've focused very heavily on here is being a good father to my two sons, good husband to my wife, and really trying to propagate that message to others. Like, that's what you should focus on, is building strong families. It's something that this country has really gotten very far away from. And I think, again, if we're talking about first principles, building blocks to really fight back against these evil forces, like really having a strong nuclear family and then extended family beyond that is really important. It's something I feel very lucky and fortunate. I'm not going to say I'm privileged, but I come from a big Irish Catholic family out of Philadelphia. A lot of aunts and uncles, a lot of cousins. We're all really close. And I think that's made me a much better person. And I would like to see that extended to become like a growing trend in the U.S. generally.
That's what's great about Hawaii. Hawaii is like 25 years behind culturally, and the local Hawaiians are super into family. Family's super important to them. They have strong bonds. I mean, the community has issues like all communities, but I mean, they do family better than, they call us Howleys, us white people. They do family better than us. And you know, many ways, you know, everyone's an auntie and an uncle, and, you know, kids are not raised by just two people. They're raised by extended family as well, but they're extended family. They're not, you know, they're not strangers. They're not the state. And, I agree with you wholeheartedly. In college, I majored in finance and anthropology. Anthropology is the study of cultures, and the cultural system that works is a strong, monogamous family unit. Polyamory is a strategy culturally. Can you name the polyamorous culture that took over the world? No, you can't, because it's a shit show.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Rome fell. It's funny how this all rhymes too. Weimar Republic fell. We all became obsessed with sex and polyamory and quickly devolved not too long after that. That trend did not last many generations before their societies collapsed. No, it's like the great, like, again, don't harp on my own family, but it's like a beautiful thing. We go to the beach. I've got 26 cousins between us. We probably have 20 kids already. We just plop them all in the circle, try to keep them in the circle. One wanders, somebody just picks them up, brings them back to the circle. And then you see them playing and growing up together and really setting that example and hoping to pass it to them. Because that's when you're mentioning, like, we don't know how long it's going to take before we get on the other side of this insanity that we're experiencing. That's like what I think about. I've got a 3 and a 1-year-old. It's like, all right, how do I prep these guys for whatever happens? Hopefully we get on the other side quicker. But if it does take a while. Like, what are the like first principles that you can instill in them to make sure that they grow up and live a good life? It all comes back to family.
Yeah, back to family. And if you're raising boys, self-control. And if you're raising women, you know, authenticity. And, you know, those are the things we need to go back to. Men need more self-control. They need to stop chasing women, and women need to stop chasing men. And, you know, think about, you know, making yourself as excellent as possible before you meet your mate. You know, this culture of pleasure, it doesn't end well. I'm on Hawaii. There's some people that pursue that. I've watched their lives ensnaring drama and a morass and just disaster.
Yeah. I feel very fortunate. I got married at 25 right before all the dating apps came out. It's just watching people who are playing that game. It's bad. I mean, it's just pure market incentives. Like, the more options you have, there's always going to be a better option out there. Another swipe, and you're going to find the one. The mechanics that those apps really drive home are terrible psychologically and for the possibility of actually like settling down and finding somebody that you want to start a family and a life with, because there's always another option out there.
I'm single. I've been divorced for 5 years, unfortunately, but I'm not on the dating apps. I'll never go on one. I meet people organically and I ask them out for a date or two. And, you know, if there's no fit, I move on, they move on. And it's interesting. Women don't get asked out anymore. So when you ask them out, they usually say yes, because they're just shocked.
Just go out, do it the old fashioned way. Yeah. Meet your wife at the beach, library, the bar, if you're drinking.
The bar, wherever, but organically. And you develop a rapport first, and then you ask them out. If they say no, so what? You know, these dating apps are just, they crack me up. I watch some of my millennial friends, and most of them are deleting them now because they're realizing what a joke it is, and they're meeting women organically, and they're having success.
Yeah, that's another like underlying trend that's picking up, is Gen Z particularly turning away from all that stuff and trying to lower their body count, because they're really realizing it just doesn't lead to happiness at the end of the day. I'm actually becoming more and more convinced that arranged marriages are somewhat good. Like, not arranged like at like the age of 14, but trying to pair your children with people that you know their parents, at least, you know, they're good people. They instilled good values in their children. Not fully convinced yet, but I do see the value in parents helping guide their children towards like a certain subset of individuals to start a life with.
The mother of my children is an excellent mother, and she had a strategy when we were raising our kids where, you know, she would view the parents and what they were like when my child would bring someone home. And she had a very clever strategy of eventually maneuvering those children out of my children's lives as the parents were a shit show. So I give her credit. She was deft at making certain children disappear, not because my kids were too young to set up the play dates. So it was a great strategy. It worked.
So just deny the play dates. That's the strategy.
Well, you know, like just kind of, you know, didn't have time. Just, you know, make sure they're always at our house and monitor. And then eventually just kind of just fade away. Kind of like ghosting someone after a couple dates. You ghost a play date, I guess.
This is good to know. This is a good strategy. Yeah. I'm going to employ. This has been great. It's always great catching up. What should we leave with here? Why should people trust Bobby Kennedy?
Well, so, you know, look, I'll just give you an anecdote. I know Bobby. I've broke bread with him and his wife. He wrote the foreword to my book. And on the first call, when I, you know, they asked me to join an exploratory committee, you know, I'm not traditionally a Democrat, but Bobby's really not a traditional Democrat, and his platform is freedom first. So that interested me. On the first call, we had some poll people. They were talking about what you can and can't talk about. And he basically said, I'm not leading from behind with polls. I'm leading with my values. And he's done that. I mean, I don't think he's listened to any of the poll people. He speaks his truth. That's what we need. So that's why I trust him. And, you know, look, if Bobby were to go sideways, I'll know what it looks like, but there's no indication. And do I agree with them on every issue? No, but the issues are so bad right now that I call them like high class issue problems, where like in the old days you could debate back and forth and he's an environmental lawyer. Does he believe that climate change is real? He knows it's been co-opted and it's being used for nefarious purposes. Does he believe corporations pollute? Sure he does. So you don't have to agree on every issue with the guy, but you can certainly trust that he's going to tell you where he stands.
Yeah. If anything, that's the breath of fresh air, is somebody who's actually saying what they believe, saying it confidently, trying to bring truth back.
Despite what the polls say, he's going to say it, and he's lead. It's called being a leader. You lead when you say things that are uncomfortable when they need to be said, and you don't care what how popular your opinion is. You just say it, and that's what he does.
Yeah, I mean, he's leaning into a good strategy too, like these long form podcasts that really allow you to get your views out there and elaborate on them. Really brings it back to like the days of really long debates that presidential candidates used to have over 150 years ago. But those mediums and those types of conversations, I think, really give you a glimpse of like who the man is behind the campaign. And that's actually, again, as an objective outside observer, as somebody who doesn't vote, I think that's a good strategy, because his competition, Joe Biden, would never go on a 3-hour long podcast uncensored, being able to take question, or having the podcaster able to ask any question they want.
What's great about Bobby is like a lot of people have the opinion, they've read the mainstream news and they say, oh, he's a wackadoodle. Then they hear one podcast, they hear him speak, and they hear him speak eloquently and nuanced about a variety of facts that he has at his fingertips. And then they look at the current, guy in the White House, and they come to the conclusion, this is a man who has a brain, who has thought about it and is very nuanced. And once they hear him speak, they change their minds. Because, if you're just surfing mainstream media headlines, that your impression is he's whacked. And he's far from whacked. He's very nuanced and smart and has a lot of evidence to back what he's saying.
Yeah, yeah. Again, breath of fresh air. Ed, if you make it on the campaign trail, you make it to Texas, let me know. Obviously, I'm in Jersey now, but I will be in Texas and staying
there
for a while.
You're in Austin, right?
Yeah.
All right. If I get to Austin, I'll look you up for sure.
All right. Yeah, my number. Look me up. Go enjoy.
I got your number.
Go enjoy your Nazi lifestyle of working class, enjoying the side of Hawaii.
Yeah.
And we'll definitely do this again at some point soon.
I guess if I was a good citizen, I'd get my vaccine card and my Krispy Kreme donut and eat it every day.
Yeah, you get your Krispy Kreme donut after you get your free Shake Shack. You got to eat the fries and the burger first.
Got to get the Shake Shack and the fries. You can't make up. I mean, I don't know why more people aren't running over to our side. I'll never. And by the way, our side isn't red team or blue team. It's team humanity and common sense. I mean, this is the easiest sell I've ever had to make in my life. The fact that I'm even, low-key celebrity, it boggles my mind, because I'm just saying stuff that like I thought anybody would say. I don't even understand it.
Well, thank you for doing it, because that's what's really needed right now. It's like an I Am Spartacus moment, where people just say what they know to be true and others have been holding it in. It gives them the confidence to then say, all right, I'm not crazy. Correct. Get on board.
Correct.
All right. I'm Spartacus. You're Spartacus.
No, I am Spartacus.
You are Spartacus. I'm Spartacus.
I want everybody on the internet to tweet out, I am Spartacus.
Yes. Let's get it started, freaks.
Yes. Yeah. That's the hashtag, I am Spartacus.
Peace and love, everybody. Enjoy your day.